Start again. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and dust destroy, and where there is breaking and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing?
So we're in our third in the series on Matthew chapter 6. For me, the 1980s was quite a formative decade in my life. By the end of the 80s, I was in my early 20s. I know what you're all thinking. He doesn't look a day over 31. You're all very kind. Much better than the ones that were here last week. That's great. Well, it was in the 1980s that the late Michael Jackson reached his peak. And whatever you thought of his eccentric behaviour, it is difficult to deny that he was a very gifted singer, songwriter, and performer. Let me just push down a bit. His ninth album is a very personal one called History, Past, Present, and Future. I quite like this album, although it's not considered one of his best. On it, there is a very interesting song called Money. You'll be pleased to know that I'm not going to try and sing it to you, but let me read some of the words to you. Money, money, lie for it, spy for it, kill for it, die for it. So you call it trust, but I say it's just in the devil's game of greed and lust. They don't care, they do me for the money. They don't care, they use me for the money. So you go to church, read the holy word, in the scheme of life, it's all absurd. They don't care, they'd kill for the money. I'll never betray or deceive you, my friend, but if you show me the cash, I will take it. If you tell me to cry, then I will fake it. You'll do anything for money, anything, anything, anything for money. Even sell my soul to the devil, but you sell your soul because your God is such. You don't care, you kill for the money. Are you infected with the same disease of lust, gluttony and greed? Then watch the ones with the biggest smiles, the idle jabbers, because they're the backstabbers. It would seem that during his remarkable 40 plus year career, Michael Jackson encountered many people, some even claiming to have some sort of spirituality, who in essence would do anything for money. And some no doubt saw him as a means to their financial gain. Now you may be more of a Mozart or a Cliff Richards or a Lady Gaga sort of person, but whatever the case, his song Money, in that song Michael Jackson poses a very important question I want us to consider here this afternoon. I wondered if you noticed it as I read from some of those lyrics. When it comes to money, his question was this: are you infected with the same disease of lust, gluttony and greed? The title of my talk this week is Who Do You Serve in This Life? In our materialistic age, an age obsessed with consumerism, with style and image, and all things superficial, many of us, many of which are connected with having money and having lots of it, it's all too easy to believe that money is the answer to everything. So let's not be too quick to answer that question. A love for money can lead you into all kinds of evil, warns the Bible. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Indecent Proposal. Actors Demi Moore and Woody Harrelson play an idealistic young married couple who are madly in love, but who are also struggling to find their feet financially. Into this situation comes a character played by Hollywood legend Robert Redford. He is a millionaire businessman who offers the couple $1 million if she will spend just one night with him. At first, the couple dismiss this offer as outrageous and absurd. But they soon begin to have second thoughts. I mean, $1 million could solve a lot of their problems. As they lie in bed one night, she says to him words to the effect, "Look, it's not as if it's my heart or my mind, it's just my body." Eventually they go through with it, to the detriment of their relationship. The question the movie raises is this: what is non-negotiable in your life? Where do you draw the line in terms of how far you're willing to go in this life to get the things that you want? Because I suppose the answer to that question tells you and me who or what we are serving in this life. See, I think this world attacks you and I in at least two ways. First, by getting you and I to live in a state of constant anxiety concerning this life and all its affairs. That, I think, is the point being made a little later in verses 25 to 34 of Matthew chapter 6, which we'll come to next week. Later in Matthew's gospel, Jesus warns that the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth can choke the word of God in our lives, thus making us and it unfruitful and unproductive. The New Testament is clear that some so-called Christians will desert the way of Christ because of the love for this world. Demas is the classic New Testament example of such a person. No wonder Peter encourages first century Christians scattered all over the world to cast their anxieties upon God because he cares about them. God knows our needs before we do. And we should take great comfort in that fact. Elsewhere in the New Testament, we are instructed to be anxious about nothing, but rather to cast all our anxieties, to bring all our concerns and troubles to God in prayer. But second, the world attacks you and I by encouraging us to fall in love with it. That, I want to suggest to you, is one way of looking at Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 to 24. Later in the New Testament, we are warned that friendship with this world means becoming an enemy of God. James 4 verse 4. We are told that anyone who loves this world does not have the love of God in them. 1 John 2 verse 15. So allowing yourself to become enamored, dazzled by this world is a dangerous preoccupation according to the New Testament. Many of us are familiar with the old saying, "All that glitters is not gold." So as I've tried to say over the last 2 weeks, don't put all your security in this world. Don't allow your ambitions in this life to be limited by the horizon of this world alone. This is where we got to so far. Now, our third question this week brings me to verse 24 of our passage. Look at it with me. It's on your sheet on the left-hand side. "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." So again, my question is this: who do you serve in this life? Look at verse 24 again with me. Notice that this verse is a bit like a sandwich. Look at the way the verse both begins and ends. Begins, "No one can serve two masters." But look at the end of the verse: "You cannot serve God and money." These two statements are a bit like the slices of bread on either side of a sandwich. And the statement in between, if you like, is a bit like the filling of our sandwich. The trouble is, the filling of this sandwich might stick in your throat. But let's focus on the slices of bread that make up this sandwich. "No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and money." Jesus here does not have in mind 21st century employers. Jesus is not talking about a person here who has decided to give a certain agreed portion of their time to their employer and is therefore free to use the rest of their time outside of this to pursue other interests. No, rather, he is thinking of a first century slave owner. In the first century, no slave could simultaneously belong to two slave masters. It was simply impossible. That's because a slave in the first century quite literally had no me time, no downtime, which belonged to him or her. There was just no such thing. Every single moment of each day belonged to his master. A first century slave was the absolute possession of his owner, and so could never ever simply do as he pleased. It was therefore impossible, inconceivable, unimaginable for a slave in the first century to have two masters. Now, many of us perhaps don't get this. So in practice, what that means is this. On Sundays, we may try to serve and honour God, if convenient, by attending a religious gathering of some kind. But from Monday to Saturday, we serve the material things of this world. What many of us fail to realise is that both the Christian God of the Bible and this world demand absolutely everything from us. Both, if you like, are totalitarian slave masters who will settle for nothing less than total obedience 24/7, 365 and a quarter days of each year. For example, later in Matthew's Gospel, Jesus says this: "Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." Elsewhere, he says that our love for him must be so great that all other earthly loves, even the love between a husband and wife, must seem like, well, hatred by comparison. Luke 14, verse 25 and following. Only a man who is also God could make such outrageous demands of anyone. But that's the point. Jesus is claiming to be God. But what about the demands of this world? Well, some years ago, at an international law conference, a senior partner of a very big practice was outlining his strategy for expanding his business. "We like our young lawyers to produce 2,500 chargeable hours a year," he said. "We put living accommodation in their offices because we find that going home spoils their rhythm." When the chairman asked him about burnout, apparently without missing a beat, he replied, "No problem, Larry. If they burn out, we don't want them." A business consultant asked a company director to describe his lifestyle. He said, "I get into the office at 7:30 a.m. and get home at 9 p.m. When asked if he worked on the weekends, he said, "On Saturdays, yes, and I'm sometimes going on Sundays to clear the decks in preparation for Mondays." When asked how long he'd been living like this, the reply came, "Almost 27 years. That, my friends, is the kind of service this world demands. I have no doubt that this is the kind of service required by bosses in the buildings surrounding us as I speak. This is the world that we live in. But what that means is this. Looking at the filling of our sandwich, it means simply this: you cannot serve both these masters. So obviously you have to decide which will take priority. Now, instead of being single-minded about this, many of us, even those of us claiming to be Christians, become double-minded, and that is, we try to do the impossible. If you look at the meat of our sandwich, as it were, we see this is clearly impossible. Jesus says either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. If you and I try to serve the kingdom of heaven and the kingdom of this world, we will find in the end that only one will end up being our first and true love. One will always take second place over and against the other. That's what Jesus is saying. In fact, your love for the one will make it seem like you hate the other. Your devotion to the one will make it seem like you despise or view as indifferent the other, because they both demand absolutely everything. And Jesus uses the example of money in verse 24, because both now and then money has had and still has all the characteristics of a pagan god. The word for money in verse 24 is where we get the word mammon. Mammon was actually the god of wealth in the ancient world. The root of this word means something like that in which one trusts or puts confidence. It is not therefore hard to see why Jesus says you cannot serve both God and mammon. All around us there are people bowing down at the altar of mammon. From those who gamble away all their hard-earned money at the casino, the local betting shop, or who religiously play the lotto each week, to those who consume book after book written by motivational speakers, the latest entrepreneurial whiz kid or financial guru who offers 10 key ways to financial prosperity, or 5 tips on how to become an instant millionaire, or how to get to the heart of success by winning friends and influencing people. And why? So that you and I can get rich, because of course the only really successful people in this life, according to the world, are those who've made their first million by the time they're 21 years of age. And of course, much of what is written, no doubt, is very helpful and instructive. But sadly, at the heart of it all lurks Mammon, the god of wealth, who whispers lies into all who will listen. Mammon, if you like, cries out to the people of this world, serve and trust in me. Worship me and I will give you security. Make me your ambition in life and I will make you happy. I will give your life meaning and purpose. Eric Morecambe was England's favourite funny man for many years back in the latter half of the 20th century. He earned a fortune from his work and could have had a very long and prosperous retirement. But he kept working right to the very end of his life. After having a serious heart attack, he was asked why he didn't just slow down and take life a bit easier. He replied, "I can't. I haven't got enough." A short time later, he died on stage at a comparatively young age. The god that is money, not unlike many a demanding boss, will not rest content until it takes everything from you and I. It is never satisfied, like seawater. The more you drink it, the more you thirst after it. The god that is money will push and push until you have perhaps gained the whole world, but in the process, and perhaps without even realizing it, you've lost your very soul, your very self. Money is a great servant, but a very poor master indeed. I don't know how you measure these things, but apparently in the 1950s, the average person laughed for 18 minutes every day, compared with only 6 minutes in the 1990s. Did you know that today there are people called laughter coaches who train people like you and I to laugh because we don't do enough of it? At best, we rely on having a Jimmy Carr or a Michael McIntyre to exploit our sense of humour so that we might laugh. Laughter apparently is good for us, but the pressures of modern life has wiped the smile quite literally from many a face. That's because money is a god that will demand of you and I everything. It can and does ruin relationships. Money is one of the main causes of marital disputes between husbands and wives. But more importantly, the god of money can destroy your relationship with the one true God, the God of the Bible, the God of Christianity. If you're not a Christian here today, then in conclusion, can I say to you that if you do decide to become a Christian, Jesus Christ demands the number one spot in your life. And so you need to count the cost. You need to ask yourself, is that a price I'm willing to pay? He demands that you have no other gods and that you serve and worship him alone and him exclusively. He will not share you with another master. Later in Matthew's gospel, Jesus says that the things of this world bear the image of this world upon them. And so you and I are to give to the world that which belongs to the world. You and I, however, bear upon our very selves the mark, the image of God. the eternal God, the God of the Bible, the God of Christianity. This God, who created you and I for a relationship with himself, has put his stamp upon each one of us. He is a God for whom we will be restless until we allow ourselves to find rest in him alone. We belong to him and therefore must worship and serve him and him alone. We should love him so much that it's as if we hate the material things of this world, and so put them and keep them in their rightful place. We should be so devoted to him that it seems to those around us that we hate or despise the material possessions we have in this world, in this life, verse 24. That we hold them in the palms of open hands. Or like Job in the Old Testament, we can say, the Lord gives and the Lord takes. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That brings us back to our question. Who do you serve in this life? Your money or the God of the Bible? Let me close by putting the question slightly differently. In the years to come, if the prosecuting lawyer of this world dragged you into court accusing you of being someone who loves God with a single-eyed devotion and determination, could your finances, whether your checkbook or your credit cards, be summoned as evidence against you? As your finances are audited, would they clearly show proof of your love, service, and devotion to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ? If you're not a Christian here this afternoon, I want to say to you, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot love God and this world and all it has to offer you. You need to decide. You need to choose. Alfie, Simon, Claire, myself, and perhaps if you came with a friend, would love to chat to you about how you can do that. Please stick around. I think there's a bit more food. There's a Christianity Explore course that is run from here from time to time. It'd be a great thing to sign up for so you can find out a bit more, in a more relaxed environment perhaps, what it is to follow the Lord Jesus Christ. I'd love to chat with you if you want to chat with me afterwards, but why don't you continue having discussions around your table. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week, hopefully.